When we're free of guilt, we can move forward, as you put it, with our lives. We can make something worthwhile out of them. Then we can make friends with ourselves again. And then we can make friends with you.
You can indeed. You'll make friends with yourself again. You'll fall in love with yourself when you know and at last acknowledge who you really are. And when you know yourself, you'll know me.
And step one in having a real, working friendship with God is complete.
Yes.
I wish it were as simple as you make it sound.
It is. Trust me.
That's step two, isn't it?
That's step two, and it's huge.
It is huge, because I don't know if I can trust you.
Thank you for your honesty.
I'm really sorry.
Don't be sorry. Never be sorry for honesty.
I'm not sorry for what I said. I'm sorry if I hurt you.
You can't hurt me. That's the point.
I can't hurt you?
No.
Even if I do something horrendous?
Even if you do something horrendous.
You won't become upset and punish me?
I will not.
That means I can go out and do anything I want.
You've always been able to do that.
Yes, but I haven't always wanted to. Fear of punishment in the hereafter has stopped me.
You need fear of God to stop you from being bad?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, when the temptation is very great, I do need fear of what will happen to me after I die. Fear for my immortal soul as a motivator to stop me.
Really? You mean you've wanted to do such horrible things that you think you'd lose your immortal soul if you did them?
Well, I can think of one example in my life, yes.
What was it?
Right here. You want me to tell you right here, in front of God and everybody?
Cute.
Yes. Go ahead. Confession's good for the soul.
Well, if you must know. Suicide.
You wanted to commit suicide?
I once thought about it very seriously, yes. And don't act so surprised. You know all about it. You're the one who stopped me.
With love, not fear.
There was a bit of fear in there, too.
There was.
I was afraid of what would happen to me if I took my own life.
So we began our dialogue?
Yes.
And now, three conversations with God books later. Are you still afraid of me?
No.
Good.
Except when I am.
And when is that?
When I don't trust you. When I don't trust that this is even you talking to me. Much less trust the outlandish promises you make.
You still don't trust that God is talking to you? Boy, that'll be interesting to your readers.
What, that I'm human? I think they know that I'm human.
Yes, but I think that they imagine you to be clear about some things, and at least convinced that you are having a conversation with God.
I am convinced.
Well, that's better.
Except when I'm not.
And when is that?
I don't feel that I can trust what you're telling me.
And when is that?
When it's too good to be true.
I see.
I go into fear. What if it's not true? What if I'm making it all up? What if I'm creating a God who will say anything I want him to say? What if you're saying just what I want to hear so that I can justify continuing my behavior? I mean, based on what you're telling me, I can do anything I want with impunity. No worry, no muss, no fuss, no price to pay in the hereafter. Hell's bells, who wouldn't want that kind of a God?
You, apparently.
But I do, except when I don't.
And when is that?
When I'm afraid, when I think I can't trust you.
What are you afraid will happen to you?
You mean if I believe the things you say, and it turns out that you're not really God?
Yes.
I'm afraid God will throw me in hell.
Why? For having at worst a fanciful conversation?
For denying the one and only true God. And for leading others to do so, for telling others that there are no consequences to their actions, and thereby causing some people to do things they might not otherwise do, because now they're not afraid of you.
You really think you're that powerful?
No, I think other people are that easily influenced.
Then why haven't they been influenced enough by those who say I'm to be feared to stop their self-destructive behaviors?
Huh?
Religion has been around for centuries, telling people I'll send them to hell if they don't believe in me this way or that way, and if they don't stop certain behaviors.
I know that.
Well, do you see those behaviors being stopped?
No, not really. The human race is killing itself, just as it always has.
Faster, actually, than it ever has. Because now you have weapons of mass destruction.
And we're being no less cruel to each other now than we ever were.
That's my observation as well. So what makes you think that if after centuries, millennia really, of religion not having easily influenced people, that somehow you're going to easily influence them, and also then be personally accountable for their actions?
I don't know. I guess I just need to think that once in a while, in order to temper my actions.
Why? What are you afraid you would do if you didn't temper your actions?
I'd shout from the highest rooftop that I found at last a God I could love, I'd invite everyone else to meet my God and to know him as I do. I'd share everything I know about you with everyone whose life I touch. I'd free people of their fear of you, and therefore their fear of each other. I'd free them of their fear of death.
And for this you think God is going to punish you?
Well, if I have it wrong about you, you will. Or he will, or it will, whatever.
I will not. Oh, Neil.
Neil. If your biggest crime is that you painted a picture of God too loving, I think you'll be forgiven for that. If you have to continue to believe in a God of reward and punishment.
And if other people do bad things like kill or rape or lie because of me?
Then every philosopher from the beginning of time who has ever spoken or written against the then-current belief system must likewise be guilty of all the deeds of man.
Perhaps they are.
Is that the kind of God you want to believe in? Is that the God you choose?
This isn't a question of choice. We're not in a God supermarket here. We don't get to make a choice about this. God is God. We'd better have our understanding about that right, or we're going to go straight to hell.
Do you believe that?
No, except when I do.
And when is that?
When I don't trust you. When I don't trust in the goodness of God, in the unconditional love of God. When I see us, all of us here on earth, as children of a lesser God.
Is that often? Do you feel that way often?
No, I have to say, no, not very often. I used to. Man, did I used to. But not since our conversations. I've changed my mind about a lot of things. Well, not changed my mind, really. What actually happened is that I allowed myself to believe what I always knew in my heart, always wanted to believe about God.
And has that been so bad for you?
Bad? No, it's been good. My whole life has changed. I've been able to believe in your goodness again, so I've been able to believe in my goodness again. Because I've been able to believe that you forgive me for all I've done, I've been able to forgive myself. Because I've stopped believing that someday, somehow, somewhere, I'm going to be punished by God, I've stopped punishing myself. Now, there are those who say that failing to believe in a punishing God is bad. Yet I see nothing but good coming from this. Because if I'm ever going to do anything worthwhile, even if I'm in prison, just talking another prisoner out of hurting someone or continuing to hurt himself, I'm going to have to forgive and stop punishing myself.
Excellent. You understand.
I do understand. I really do. And I haven't abandoned everything I've been told in our conversations. I just need a tool now, a tool with which I can create a new friendship with you, a real friendship with you at last.
I'm going to give you those tools right here.
Yes, you are. Even before I've asked, you've answered.
As always.
As always. So tell me, how can I learn to trust?
By not having to.
I can learn to trust by not having to trust?
That's right.
Help me here.
If I don't want or need anything from you, do I have to trust you for anything?
I suppose not.
You are correct.
So the highest level of trust is not having to trust?
You're correct again.
But how can I go to a place of not wanting or needing anything from you?
By realizing that it's already yours. That whatever you need is already yours. That even before you ask, I will have answered. Therefore, asking is not necessary.
Because I don't have to ask for what I already have.
Exactly.
But if I have it already, why would I even think I needed it?
Because you don't know you already have it. It is a matter of perception.
Do you mean that if I perceive that I need something, I do?
You will think that you do.
But if I think that God will meet all my needs, then I will not think that I do.
That is correct. That is why faith is so powerful. You have faith that all your needs will always be met, then technically you have no needs at all. And this is the truth, of course. And it will become your experience, and so your faith will be justified. Yet all you will have done is change your perception.
What I expect is what I get?
Something like that, yes. Yet the true master lives outside the space of expectation. He expects nothing and desires nothing more than what shows up.
Why?
Because he already knows he has everything, and so he happily accepts whatever part of everything it is that shows up at any particular moment. He knows that it is all perfect, that life is perfection, playing itself out. Under these circumstances, trust is not required.
Or, to put it another way, trust becomes knowing.
Yes. There are three levels of awareness around everything. These are hope, belief, and knowing.
When you have a hope about something, you are wishing that it is true or that it will happen. You're not certain in any sense of the word.
When you have a belief about something, you are thinking that it is true or that it will happen. You are not certain, but you think you are certain, and you continue to think so unless something to the contrary appears in your reality.
When you have a knowing about something, you are clear that it is true or that it will happen. You are certain in every sense of the word, and you continue to be certain even if something to the contrary appears in your reality. You judge not by appearances, because you know what is so.
So I can learn to trust you by knowing that I don't have to trust you.
That is correct. You have come to a knowingness that the perfect thing is going to occur. Not that a particular thing is going to occur, but that the perfect thing is going to occur. Not that what you prefer is going to occur, but that which is perfect is going to occur. And as you move toward mastery, these two become one. Something occurs, and you prefer no occurrence other than what is occurring. It is your very preferring of whatever is occurring that renders that occurrence perfect. This is called letting go and letting God. A master always prefers what occurs. You too will have reached mastery when you are always preferring what is occurring.
But isn't this the same as having no preference at all? I thought you've always said your life proceeds out of your intentions for it. If you have no preferences, how can this be true?
Have intentions, but don't have expectations, and certainly don't have requirements. Do not become addicted to a particular result. Don't even prefer one. Elevate your addictions to preferences, and your preferences to acceptances. That is the way to peace. That is the way to mastery.
You know, a wonderful teacher and writer, Ken Kies, Jr., talked about just this idea in an exceptional book called A Handbook to Higher Consciousness.
Indeed. His formulations in that book were very important and, for many people, groundbreaking.
He spoke of changing addictions to preferences. He had to learn how to do that in his own life because, for most of it, he was in a wheelchair, immobile from the chest down. Had he been addicted to greater mobility, he could never have found a way to be happy. But he came to realize that it was not outer circumstances that were the source of happiness, but rather our inner decisions about how we choose to experience them. This formed the core of his writing, though most of his books didn't mention his physical challenges. So when he was asked to give lectures, people were often shocked to see him virtually immobile in his wheelchair. He wrote with such joy of love and life that they imagined him to have everything he ever wanted.
He did have everything he ever wanted. But those last three words contain an enormous secret. The secret of life is not to have everything you want, but to want everything you have.
To borrow from another wonderful writer, John Gray.
John is a wonderful writer, that's true. But who do you think is borrowing from who? I gave him those ideas just as I inspired Ken Kies.
Who's there with you now?
Who is indeed. And free of his wheelchair, I might add.
I'm so glad. It's a shame he had to spend so much of his life in one.
It is not a shame. It is a blessing. Ken Kies changed millions of lives because he was in that wheelchair. Millions of lives. Let's make no mistake about this. Ken's life was a blessing, as was every circumstance in it. It provided the exact and perfect people, places, and events to produce for the soul, then calling itself Ken, the experience and the expression for which it yearned and which it had intended. This is true of everyone's life. There is no such thing as bad luck. Nothing happens by accident. There are no coincidences. And God doesn't make mistakes.
In other words, everything is perfect just the way it is.
That's right.
Even if things don't look perfect.
Especially if they don't look perfect. That's a sure sign that there's something huge for you to remember here.
So you're saying we should be grateful for the worst things that happen to us?
Gratitude is the fastest form of healing. What you resist persists. What you are grateful for can then serve you as it was meant to do. I have told you.
I have sent you nothing but angels.
Now I will add.
I have given you nothing but miracles.